Hi, everyone. This is Judy Warner with the Altium On Track podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Today, we have another incredible subject matter expert that you'll be familiar with because we've had him here before, which is Chris Hunrath from InSelectro. And we're going to talk about flex and material sets and all kinds of really great things. So hang tight for that. Before we get going, please, I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn. I share a lot of things there for designers and engineers. And on Twitter, I'm at Altium Judy, and Altium is on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Today, Chris has some show and tell, and so I encourage you, Chris will take time to describe what he's showing, but if you want to see it, feel free to go to our YouTube channel at Altium. Click under videos and you'll see all our podcasts there, and you can click on this podcast and then you'll be able to visually see the materials and things that Chris is referring to today. And that's always available, by the way, on YouTube. So we record simultaneously in video and in audio. So just know that's always a opportunity there for you. So Chris, welcome back. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Hi.
Thanks for joining again. So at the end of last time's podcast, we were talking about the rise in flex applications and sort of the increasing amount of business actually InSelectro is doing around flex materials. New materials are going out. So I really wanted to take this opportunity to learn about what is driving this uptick in flex, what applications are driving it, you know, what the cost performance implications of that is. And so let's just start with what is driving this uptick in flex.
So a lot of it's medical, and the way electronics are finding, you know, their way into medical applications. Actually, it's everything. It's automotive. It's aerospace. It's military. Military has always been a big user of flex. Mm-hmm. But of course, all the new inventions that are used in medical applications, certainly some devices are implantable, and that's something that's not new. But then we're seeing a lot of applications where instruments are being created that are used, you know, for surgeries and things. Mm. And they use flex circuits. And that's because you can make things very small, which is always an advantage.
Yeah,
you know, when it comes to those applications, and we're even seeing some applications where the products are reused, they're being sterilized, autoclaved, what have you, and then they're being reused. But lots of new techniques, lots of new devices being developed using flex. You know, most people are familiar with traditional flex applications, like your laptop screen. You know, very often the interconnect
right.
between the main, you know, the main system and the screen is a flex circuit. You know, the old flip phones, you know, all had flex
yeah.
circuits. You know, your inkjet printers, you know, had a dynamic flex circuit, you know, between the print head and the actual motherboard and, mm-hmm. and the printer. And actually, that's something I do want to point out is, you know, we describe flex applications in two main buckets. One is dynamic flex, and the other is the flex to install. And it's just exactly what it sounds like is flex to install. Typically, you're only bending the circuit once or twice to fit it in whatever it needs to go into, and then that's
mm-hmm.
it.
Right. right.
Whereas dynamic flex, you know, the parts flexed in use, you know, many, many, many times.
Right. I think that something that most people can relate to because you can see it is the flex inside copy machines, right? You can see
right.
that dynamic flex moving and again and again. And so are the materials or the entire circuit rated to have X amount of dynamic motions, you know, for the life of it? Or how does that work?
Yeah, actually, that's a very good point. And that could become very complex. A lot of it has to do with layer count, the base material. You know, the most popular base material for flex circuits in reflow assembled PCB, a little different
okay.
than printed electronics applications, we're using conductive adhesive. But if you're doing reflow assembly, the most common material is polyimide film. And
right.
one of the most common materials is Kapton.
Right.
But the thickness of the materials, the type of copper circuitry, the thickness of the copper foil, All those play into a number of bend cycles. Even the type of copper, whether you use rolled and annealed, which is very common in flex, versus electrodeposited oil. But that can get very complex. There are some good design guidelines out there by IPC and others. Again, I always shout out to the board shops. Some of them are, they have good teams that
They
help
do.
people, choose the right construction, the right stack up to get the most out of the most bend cycles out of the device.
Are those the two most common types of copper used in flex, by the way, Chris? Is the rolled anneal and electroless?
Oh, it's electrodeposited,
I'm
and
sorry,
yes,
electrodeposited. Okay.
and yes, unless you're dealing with very thin foils, rolled annealed is the most common, or
Okay.
what we call RA foil is the most
All
common.
right.
Actually, I have a sample here. This is
Okay.
some Pyrolux clad. You can't see the dielectric inside, but it's got rolled annealed copper on both sides, and
Very good.
it can vary from, used to be limited to 1/2 ounce or 18 micron and thicker. So a little side note on foils, as you go thicker, it's harder to make electrodeposited foils because it's more plating time on the drum. With rolled annealed, it's the opposite. Thinner foils are harder to manufacture because you need more rolling processes to make the foil thinner and thinner and thinner.
I see.
Used to be limited to 18 micron or 1/2 ounce. Now we can get rolled annealed coppers thinner, down to 9 micron. Or a 1/4 ounce, you can get in rolled annealed. But
Okay.
it's rolled annealed, the structure is much better for flexing because the grain boundaries are in this direction, platelet type overlapping grain boundaries, which is better
Okay.
for bending. You
Okay.
need foil, the grain boundaries are like this, and if you bend it, you can cleave the grain boundaries and you get more bend. It's not that ED foil doesn't work in flex, but you typically get more bend cycles out of rolled annealed.
Okay, very good. That's something actually I didn't know, and it is something. I've talked to my friend Tara Dunn, who's in Flex, and it's just something that's never come up. So I think that's kind of an interesting point. So you mentioned with military applications, because my background in military was always swap, right? Size, weight, and power, right? So are those the same type of things that drive the other applications? Obviously, smaller spaces, we can fold things upon themselves and get them into smaller packaging. Then
Right.
you talk about the dynamic. What other kind of things sort of drive the desire and the fit for flex?
So something that's applicable to both military and medical is you want to reduce the size. So I have here, this is a 50 ohm SMA coax, right? It's basically one circuit, right? You've got the shield layer, the shielding around the center conductor. But this is one channel or one circuit, and I have here a flex, and you can see how many circuits you have on this piece. So imagine if you had to have one of these for each one of
For each
these.
channel, right.
Now, if you, depending on the design, whether it's strip line, microstrip, and whether or not you have in plane shielding. It might be every other one's a signal, but still the weight and size is the difference between having cables, right? Which I, you know, what's what I'm holding up right now
Right.
versus having a flex circuit is huge.
Right.
And in the case of medical, some of those traces could be as narrow as 20 micron. So you could fit a lot of circuitry in a very small space. And, depending on the medical device, we see some of our customers will build circuits that are very, very long and very, very narrow, and you can imagine, how they're used in surgery and other medical applications. And you might have, 20, circuits on that part, but it's in a very, very, very small space.
Right. That
And
totally makes
20,
sense.
now just to be clear, 20 micron circuitry is not easy to do. It's doable, not easy to do.
Right.
But certainly 50 microns is, most board shops can do that these days. Again, you can fit a lot of circuits in a small space, and of course they can flex, they can bend. But in the case of rigid flex, right, where you have a rigid part and bridged with a flex part, and here's another example, where you'd have, this is not necessarily rigid flex, but you would have components here and then a connector here. You're replacing all these cables, right,
Right.
with this section. So
Right.
that's how it drives weight and space and even reliability. Fewer interconnections, tend to be more reliable. So that really,
Right.
really helps. So the Flex has been, growing quite a bit for us, for our business. And so, a lot of it's based on DuPont Kapton and DuPont Pyrolux products. And that there's a B stage system for laminating the different layers. And of course, the core or the clad material has the foil on both sides. And then our customers will print and etch to whatever pattern they need and put those layers together as building blocks.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about design for flex, since most folks listening here will be engineers or layout folks. What are some things that people need to keep in mind about designing these kind of circuits that's sort of unique to flex?
So there's a couple of good, again, some good guides out there, both by IPC. DuPont has a Flex manuals for different types of categories, whether it's multi-layer, single-sided, double-sided flex. They have some good guidelines on that. But in general, what you want to avoid is you don't want circuits to make turns or bends in the bend area. So, for example, I'm going to use this one as an example again.
Okay.
If this is the flex area in this middle section here, you
Yes.
wouldn't have the circuits go in different directions in that area. So
Right.
you want to keep them basically parallel in that area, and you also don't want plated through holes in those areas. Again, these are just real general rule basic guidelines. The other thing you want to avoid is what we call an I-beam effect, where you have circuits directly above each other with the dielectric in between. You want to stagger them. That helps, again, more important for dynamic flex than bend to install, but it's important not to have the I-beam effect because that could lead to circuit cracks.
That makes sense.
Concentrates the bending. And in general, from a stack up standpoint, you want to try and balance the construction. Thinner is typically better. There's all kinds of iterations. If it's a multi-layer flex, there's loose leaf constructions where you wouldn't necessarily bond the different layers together in the flex or bend region. You'd have them, not connected. Bookbinder system is another way to do it, where depending on the direction of bend, the layers that are on the outside of the bend are actually longer than
Yes.
the layers on the inside. And again, the fabricators that are skilled in that know how to space that and to change the length of the circuit. And but from a simpler standpoint, or from a more general standpoint, thinner is typically better. Balanced constructions are typically better, for flex
Well,
for
balanced
flex design.
construction is always a good idea. I'm just
Yeah,
saying.
even in rigid, yeah.
Yeah, but I could see that, right? Because I think you, what you're saying, if I'm hearing you right, is you have to look for those opportunities for cracking, right? Or stressing,
Right,
at the bend
because
radius, because that makes sense, right? Just from a physics standpoint, it makes sense that things would want to give or pull, right? In
right
that.
when you bend a flex circuit, you're stretching the outside and compressing the inside, right? And every circuit will fail at some point. It's a matter of how many cycles you get out of it before it fails.
Right. How do you measure those cycles, by the way?
Well, there are some standardized tests. There's an MIT bend test. There's some other testing that's done to see how a particular material or even a design or a stack up performs, where I'm sorry, repeatedly until you get failure, and then you can rate the stack up or the material. But it's important to.
Where can you get that data? You mentioned IPC as a source. Is there any other resources you could share that I could share with the listeners where they could kind of
Well,
maybe look at some of
actually,
these readings or
yeah, actually, so DuPont's website, the Pyrolux website has some data on
Okay.
that, and certainly some of the folks there could, put your
Okay.
listeners in touch with some of the design guidelines.
Okay. All right. I know some folks there. If you and I can't find them through the website, then Jonathan just came in to talk at IPC Designers Council Orange County. I'll reach out to him, see if
Oh,
he can.
Jonathan Weldon, yeah, he's a great resource for that. So speaking of Jonathan Weldon, he's been working with HD Pug. They've been looking at shield layers or reference planes, and they've been looking at the difference between solid planes and crosshatch systems. And so this is actually a simple test circuit, microstrip construction where you have a reference plane on one side and your trace, on the other. Imagine if this were a strip line construction and you had copper on both sides, with your transmission line in the middle. One of the challenges with all PCBs, and especially with flex, is absorption of moisture, and then that moisture release during assembly causing delamination. And one of the things that you can do to mitigate that is to bake the parts. Well, if you have solid copper areas, baking does not work as well because the moisture's got to go around the copper, it can't go through it. So crosshatch ground planes are great for two purposes. One is it's a moisture egress for baking. The other advantage is it's actually better for flexibility. It makes the part more flexible.
Makes sense.
The downside is high frequency applications, you can run into some issues. So and one of the interesting things that Jonathan and company they were looking at was the difference between a round opening and what's typically used is it's
Kind of a
I'm going to
diamond
call
shape.
exactly, and really it's more of a square turned on its side, but yeah, the diamond shape versus the and it's funny how circuit design is always in orthogonal patterns, but that's not necessarily the best way to go. And anyway, the round shape was better for signal performance, and
Oh,
it
for the high
makes
speed
sense.
applications?
Yeah, it makes sense because if you took a circle that fit inside a square, you actually have less open area. So,
Yeah, this is true. Okay.
yeah,
All right.
so there's some interesting data on that. But I would recommend to a customer, depending on their frequency bandwidth, bit rate, depending on what kind of design it is, that they would look at using an open plane, or basically with a screen, for lack of better words, versus a solid plane, because the reliability goes way up.
Okay, now you just made me think of something. Last time we talked, we were talking about prepregs and glass, being reinforced, right? When you're using adhesive systems for flex, I'm assuming they're non-reinforced.
Right.
It's a more stable material, though. So tell us a little bit about that, about sort of the
Yeah.
stability, the dimensional stability, and.
Yeah. So really, in flex circuits, the Kapton film, the polyimide film, because it's a thermoset, it is acting like the fiberglass in your flex circuit. Now
Oh, okay.
you don't have skew issues because there's no glass, so you don't have the micro decay effects. Now, if you do have a crosshatch plane, you will have a difference. Different. You'll have a micro impedance effect, if you would, but that usually doesn't change with differential pairs. Unless again, depending on where you put the traces, but you don't have the fiberglass micro decay effect at all. Now, Kapton's interesting. It's very thermally stable, but it's not as mechanically strong as glass reinforced laminate. So it tends to change more for mechanical distortion than it does for thermal. It's not shrinking like epoxies do when they cure. Certainly when you remove all the copper, and I actually have a piece here. This is a piece of Pyrolux AP with all the copper etched off. This is 100% polyimide. Used to have copper cladding on it, and the copper's been mostly etched off. You can see a little bit of copper left from the tape I used to run this through an etcher. But the material is pretty strong, but it does just it can distort mechanically, more so than thermally. So again, this is kind of like the fiberglass in a regular PCB, and then you'd have B stages of some sort to put all the layers together.
So the actual substrate is creating the stability
Right.
in the case of flex. Okay, that makes sense.
It's a polyimide film. In the case of Pyrolux, which is a DuPont branded flex material, it's based on Kapton. It's based on Kapton film.
Okay.
So,
So So, okay, we talked about ground planes. We talked about where to not put. Is there any other sort of design for flex things that you'd want to mention that are just rather commonplace?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things. For example, you could use a pad that's a little bit larger than you would normally use that would go underneath the coverlay. Now, let me back up a little bit and talk about coverlay. So what coverlay is, it's basically a capped-on adhesive laminate that is the flexible equivalent of solder mask. Now, unlike solder mask, which is used in PCB, which is photo-imageable, coverlay has to be mechanically formed and then laminated over the circuitry. So you'd have openings, and this again, this is another good example. You have openings in the coverlay. I don't know if you could see that on this, but there's openings in the coverlay for each individual pad, and then that's laminated over. One of the ways to get more reliability out of the pads is to make the pad a little bit bigger than the opening in the coverlay. So you have coverlay over the perimeter of the pad. It's kind of like what we call solder mask defined pad and rigid. Except you're doing it in flex, and that's one way to get reliability. But there are a lot of different things in flex that you should be aware of, and that's where some of these design guides and things
Okay,
help.
we'll try to track some of those down and put those in the show notes because I think that would be really helpful to have something kind of tangible. Something I remember learning from someone else is also talking about teardropping pads.
Yes.
Is that
Yeah.
something that you would recommend as well?
Yeah, and that's good for a couple of different reasons. One is that's more material that goes under the coverlay. Again, helps mechanically support the pad. It's also important. Typically, you don't put holes or pads near a bend area, but that could be an area where you could concentrate bending. So in other words, you go from a trace to a pad. That's going to become a concentration of right at the edge of the pad, a concentration of stress. And so if you do the teardrop, that distributes that stress over a larger area and helps prevent circuit cracking. But again, you would try and avoid that in your design. You would make that a bend area. And actually, speaking of rigid flex, one of the things that you would typically do is the coverlay would go into the rigid portion only 50 mils. Okay, and then you would keep the coverlay and its adhesive out of the plated through-hole areas in the rigid portion and rigid flex. And that's also a keep-out region for plated through-holes. You wouldn't want plated through-holes going through that region. So again, a lot of this stuff is spelled out in some of the manuals that you can get from DuPont and others.
All right. I'll reach out to Jonathan and you and I can scrounge up some things and we'll make sure to include those here. Last thing I wanted to talk to you about, which I was just stunned by, is that you told me that DuPont has come out with a new material that has unbelievable thermal performance. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so classically in flex, you have your B stage or adhesives that are part of the package, and then you have your core materials, which are your building blocks. And you would print net your core just like rigid, and you would put them together with either your rigid or your flex adhesives to make a multi-layer system. What's different about this new product? It's called Pyrolux HT, and in fact, I got my Pyrolux HT mug here. But instead of using acrylic or epoxy adhesives to bond the kapton layers together, you use this thermoplastic polyimide layer. Now it's got a very high melting point. And thermoplastics are used in PCB. People are familiar with FEP and liquid crystal
LP,
polymers,
right.
right? Those systems. The only way thermoplastics work in PCB or reflow assembled PCB is to have a high melting point. Otherwise, it would melt at assembly. So this is a piece of the thermoplastic polyimide that DuPont manufactures. It's the HT bonding film. This could either be a coverlay or it could be an adhesive layer to make a multi-layer PCB. But the nice thing about this is it has a 225 Celsius operating temperature, which is very, very high.
What does that
Now,
convert to Fahrenheit?
oh gosh, 225 C. It's over 400 degrees
Or
Fahrenheit,
C,
right?
220 Fahrenheit. Okay, I wasn't
Yeah.
hearing you
So
correctly.
it's
So it
that.
was Fahrenheit. Okay.
Oh no, wait, hang on. 225. I
Nice.
should know this off the top of my head. 437 Fahrenheit.
Wow.
So, you know, some applications that
And
were.
that's an operating, continuous operating
Yes.
temperature, which is
Yeah.
crazy because some materials can take that heat for a little while or, but not continuing operating temperature, right?
Right. So most PCB materials that go through reflow assembly, which is either done at 260, you know, Celsius, depending on the type of solder or 288 C, they can withstand that for a short period of time. Most PCB materials survive that. It's the operating temperature. Most epoxy systems are come in around 130 to 150 C operating temperature, maximum operating temperature.
That's wild.
So the HT is
So is
higher.
I'm guessing, so what are the applications where this will be
So
exciting news?
applications where you had you know fiberglass you know coax or some other applications like that where you had you know wired high temperature wired connections or cable connections you could replace now with a printed circuit board. So engine compartments, aircraft engine compartments, you know, aerospace downhole. I mean, there are a lot of different applications. Even from a medical standpoint, you know, imagine making a flex circuit that could be autoclaved over and over and over again, and you don't have to worry about the elongation.
I was gonna ask you about that earlier. I don't really know what temps they autoclave at, but you mentioned that before that medical applications could to could autoclave right to
Yeah, so
kill the
uses,
bacteria, but like,
right.
what's the normal temp of an autoclave and how many times can you do that?
We have one customer that builds some parts that are autoclaved at 135 C, but
Okay.
it's, you know, it's with steam and it's hard on circuits. It's hard on electronics.
Yeah, seems like it would be.
But for HT, it wouldn't be any issue because you're nowhere near the melting point. Now, it will absorb some moisture, which could be removed could be removed with a bake,
Okay.
but in a lot of applications, it won't matter. If the assembly's already done, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
You know, there is some change in the transmission properties of the material when it absorbs some moisture. But again, that could be removed with a bake. But
Okay.
that is one of the challenges with reusable medical devices is sterilization and
Right.
how well the materials hold up. And HT would be good for that. The downside of HT is it does require a 600 degree lamination, Fahrenheit.
Okay. Well, there you go. There's the. So, how many
So
board
that's the
shots
rub.
have lamp presses that go up to that temp?
So we took a look at our customer base, and it's not a lot of them. Or some of our customers had or have lamination presses that are capable. They're rated that high, but they haven't been turned up that high for a long, long time. So it's funny. Some of our customers have started making some HT. All the weaker heaters, you know, that the press might be 10 years old. They turn it up for the first time to that higher temperature, and they start popping heaters, and they have to go and replace them. But actually, we're seeing a trend, though. A lot of our customers are buying laminating equipment, and right now, that's a whole nother story because lead times are way out on equipment in
Oh.
general. But what we're seeing is people are making sure they have that high temperature capability, and it's not just for something like HT; it's for LCP and FEP as well. You know,
Okay.
fluoropolymer film. They have some good properties, electrical and signal
They
properties, and
do. They're
that's a big deal these days.
performance-wise, they're very good.
Right. They're harder to fabricate,
Yeah.
but they do have some good properties. So, you know, even, you know, we talked about last time, even glass reinforced PTFE materials, some of them require high, you know, high lamination temperatures.
Yeah,
So,
they do.
yeah. So,
Well,
oh,
that,
actually, one more material I
go
did want to
ahead.
mention.
All
Sorry.
right, let's see
So
it.
this material actually is a Teflon Kapton laminate. It's called
Wait,
TK.
hold on. Teflon Kapton. Oh, okay.
So it's called TK. It's a Pyrolux product from DuPont, and so it has a core of Kapton to act as the XY stabilizer, but then it has a Teflon material on both sides. And again, this is a building block, but it's very low loss and very low decay. So decay of about 2.5, with a very, very low loss. But unlike glass reinforced Teflon systems, this has no fiberglass, so no skew. and no detrimental effect from the fiberglass. It's using the Kapton instead as the stabilizer. Because if you had a piece of, I should have brought out a piece of Teflon, but PTFE films you can easily, you know, mechanically stretch.
One time when I was in the RF and microwave board space, I had the board shop I was working for take all the materials, like Rogers, Taconic, whatever, and I had them strip all the copper off. And I went, like the 4000 series, 6000 series, 3000 series, all the way up to 5880, and strip off the copper. Because when you see them clad, they don't look that different from each other.
Right.
But I'm like, here's Teflon. It is like a piece of rubber. And imagine heating that up, exposing that to aqueous hot processes. And so I think that really helped people to understand, how
Yeah.
vastly different they are. And I think it was a good visual, actually, to help people understand how radically different these are, right? And when you start stripping off all the copper and you have fine lines and all that, then it's a whole different animal.
Yeah, the TK material is the core material is nice because the Kapton layer does provide mechanical strength. Again, though, the TK, instead of requiring 600 degree lamination, it requires 550. So it's still a high temperature product, which requires, you know, the right press book, the right materials and lamination, and it also requires a press being capable. And the other two is the board shop needs to get accustomed to the dimensional changes during the lamination process with these materials. Again, a lot of it's mechanically driven, but you need to know how to work with it. And so that's something that the board shop needs to have experience with. But
Well, and I imagine that you're not going to see these materials outside of sort of high performance or high speed capable board shops.
that's true.
I
You
don't
know,
know
we're
if that's true. I guess I'm
well.
looking to you for an answer on there, but it's an assumption I would make.
Here's the interesting thing about AP. AP by itself is actually pretty good electrically. It's the adhesive layers you use that incur a lot of the loss. So then if you get into the thermoplastic systems that have better electrical performance, now you're getting into the high temperature range. So it's, you know, it's one of those give and take situations. But you can mix and match the materials to some degree. You could use, for instance, HT bonding film with AP clads. Your operating temperature would default to the AP operating temperature, which is still pretty high at 180 C. But electrically, it's pretty good. You get away from the acrylic and the epoxy adhesives, which aren't great electrically, you know, in terms of loss of dielectric constant. So I think as board shops become better equipped with high temperature systems, you'll see a broader use of these materials.
I mean, the market is going to drive us there one way or the other, right? If there's a demand, then the board shops will do what they need to do. One thing, a comment I want to make about that is, I was in one board shop and I was stunned, and then just felt like, wow, I could have had a V8 moment. Is they were providing really high speed, high performance circuits to some high end military stuff, and they had moved completely away from rigid high performance laminates and used multiple layers of flex materials, and the performance. And I'm like, oh, well, that seems like an obvious, but I had no idea that was even happening. Is that something you have seen where they just use?
Yeah, if you wanted to get rid of skew completely, you could use a film-based system.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, that makes sense. And I'm sure there's some challenges there, because I could tell they had to rigidize the bottom or put some kind of carrier or something, because they didn't want it to flex quite that much. But they just stacked these film systems on top of each other. And I'm like, huh, didn't know you could do that. But they were clearly doing it on a routine basis. So thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I've seen some board designs where you might have, you know, 12 cores of Pyrolux, right? And then use regular rigid prepreg as a bonding system. So, and the board's not, when it's all done, it's not flexible. It's rigid.
It is rigid, but it's a weird. It's
Yeah.
weird to see. Anyways, but
I actually have a board here.
okay,
So,
let's
and
see it.
it unfortunately it's single-sided. So it's kind of like a potato chip. but because there's only one layer of copper and only one
Right.
layer of prepreg. But this is actually DuPont's AP product with isolus tachyon prepreg, and it's a spread glass prepreg. So you have the spread glass prepreg on one side, and you've got the Pyrolux AP on the other. So you minimize how much glass is in here, which really drops the amount of impact or micro decay effect, which would lead to skew and other signal performance issues. So there are lots of different ways you could use the flex materials, even in a rigid design.
Yeah, I did see that and I was shocked, and I it's something I hadn't heard a lot about. Anyways, well, we're about out of time today again. And but thank you so much. Every time I talk to you, I feel like I learn so much, and it's fascinating to me where the industry's going and what's happening with flex, and it's exciting. It's really an enabler, right? And these high temp products and that. So it's a really exciting time to see, you know. We always break through one way or another. It's just interesting to see who gets it done. So it's very interesting to see what we're doing with flex.
Oh, thank you, Judy, for giving us the opportunity to talk about some of the materials we supply. But yeah, it's these are all building blocks, and I mean, I kind of view us as a material science company. In fact,
You are,
that
yeah.
we provide all these different building blocks to meet the need of what the customer needs and what
And there
the
is, and there's really unique ways to put those building blocks together. So it's fascinating to learn about. Okay, so something I didn't ask you last time, but I'm going to ask you now. Are you a geek or
So
a
the best way I heard the two described is the difference between a geek and a nerd is a geek is the one who gets things done.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So I would like to think I'm somebody who gets stuff done. So that would put me in the geek camp, but
Okay.
in any case.
All right, check. Geek. All right, geek. Okay, and the second question I have for you, on a scale from 1 to 10, how weird are you?
Oh gosh, I would say 5. I mean, that's
That's a safe. I'm sorry, but if we're in this industry, we're at least 5 or above, I think, you know.
maybe,
We have to be a little wacky to do what
maybe.
we do. Okay, well, thanks. I appreciate it so much. And
You're welcome.
again, you know, we were talking on the phone yesterday. We have more to cover, so I'm gonna for sure have you back again and talk about printed electronics, which is on the rise and you know a lot about. And also, I'm very excited to talk about, oh, there it
Printed
is.
electronics, yeah. That's a whole nother world of electronics, and yeah, that's
Wait,
and we also.
wait. Bring that back and tell our listeners what exactly that is.
So this was printed with a Zebra label printer, where the and no changes to the machine, by the way, but the a special foil is put into the system where you would normally put a roller with a pigment film. So instead of printing a black label, you're printing metal foil. So yeah, it's kind of interesting.
And
This is
what's,
also,
yes, what is that for?
well, this is something did for me at our booth. This is just an antenna, but you could make electronic designs on the fly. Now the
Dude, you're
downside.
still not answering my question here. What is that antenna for?
So I'm going to use that for an antique stereo I have. I have an antique FM stereo. A tube, old tube radio. I'm going to use that as an antenna
See,
on the
oh,
back.
see, definitely five weird. I see.
Oh,
I'm gonna make that matrix instead of the hot crazy matrix. I'm gonna make like the geeky weird matrix. And so, yeah, you're at least at a five high and a geek.
anyway, printed electronics is pretty exciting. I mean, and again, it's all material science based. As the materials get better, you're going to be able to do more things. Higher conductivity inks, higher temperature inks. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do in that area. Typically, the substrates are different. They're typically lower cost, lower temperature capable substrates. But you can make all kinds of things. So we'll get into that next time.
Okay, we'll definitely do that. And the other thing I'm excited to talk to you about because I know nothing about it, is paste interconnects. And you shared a little bit. So Anyways, we have at least one or two more podcasts ahead of us. So, for our listeners, stay tuned and we'll make sure and share everything Chris has talked about today and hook you up with resources through DuPont, HD Pug, IPC, wherever we can find them. We'll make sure and share those resources that will help you lay out a better flex and onboard as much information as you can. So, Chris, thanks again. We'll see you next
Welcome.
time and we'll, tackle another hot topic.
Okay.
Again, this has been Judy Warner with the On Track Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and thank you to Chris Hunrath from InSelectro. We will see you next time. Until then, always stay on track.